moment, we're going to be talking with David Ditchfield, who fell under a speeding train. Can you believe that? And had his near-death experience. And also, if you want to see what the afterlife looks like, he's got some dramatic paintings that he was able to do after this event that we have posted at coasttocoastam.com. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. David Ditchfield is a near-death experiencer, inspired artist, composer, author. He wants to use his NDE to make positive differences in your lives. In 2006, he was dragged under a speeding train in a freak accident. We'll talk about that. As the surgeons fought to save him, he had a profound near-death experience. When he woke in the hospital, he had acquired some astonishing new abilities, and he found that he could paint dramatic paintings of what he had seen in the afterlife. We've got those at coasttocoastam.com, far beyond any artistic ability he had before. And then he discovered he could compose classical music, having never received any training. That's amazing. His book is called Shine On. David, welcome to the program. Looking forward to this with you tonight.
Hey, George. Thanks for having me on.
Tell me how you got pulled under a speeding train.
Right. Okay.
Oh, my God. Well, I hate to have you relive this again, but we got to find out what happened to you.
No worries. I've spoken about it quite a few times now. So, basically what happened was I'd been living in London at the time, and my sister lived in Cambridge and out in the country. And she said, come and spend a few days with us, because I was down on my luck really at that point in my life, and I needed a break. So I was up there for a few weeks, and a friend that I just met in London came up and stayed with me, and I was seeing her off at the rail station. She needed to get back to town, and I helped her onto the train carriage with her bags, and gave her a hug. And I was just kissing her goodbye, and then I heard the emergency buzzers going for the doors about to close. So she was going, David, get off. I was going, yeah, I'm going, don't worry. And as I stepped back, it was a very cold February day.
Yeah.
And my coat got caught in the actual closing doors.
Oh.
Doors. So, like, the bottom half of it was trapped in there, and it was like, oh, boy, I tried to pull it free, but it was like a good quality sheepskin, and it wasn't going to come out. So I called for help. I looked around, and there was no guard on the platform that day. And I thought, no, there was only one other guy, actually, just behind me, who'd been seeing off his partner also. And, he said, take your coat off, mate.
Right, exactly.
And I said, yeah. I said, there's no way it's going to come off, because the sheepskin lining was, like, so thick, it was just, hugging the arms of the whole jacket.
You were trapped in it.
Exactly. There was no way it was just going to slip out. So I started banging on the windows, shouting for help, hitting the automatic door buttons, but nothing happened.
Oh.
So I just stood there, and I was looking at my friend Anna, and we were just staring through the glass at each other. And the look of horror on her face was just, understandable. And then at that point, I figured, well, this is it. The engines were just revving up to leave. And I figured, I'm not going to get away from this, and I'm probably going to die at this point. And it started pulling up pace, and the train went incredibly fast. It's amazing how fast a train pulls out of the station when you're on the outside of it. You believe you me, it's like it's a different story. You don't realize.
Oh, my God.
And I lost my footing eventually and was dragged along the platform. And then I was pulled between the gap of the platform edge and the train itself. And then
you're kind of like in that groove, kind of like in a groove, right?
Yeah, that's it. And it's not a very wide gap at all. But because of the full speed and thrust of the train, and me still being attached to it, I went down. And I just remember thinking, well, this is it. I'm going to die. I was just pulled down, and I remember seeing the side of the carriages seemed to disappear into the sky, and it was like a tremendous drop, and then I was thrown into like this darkness, and I was just tossed around like a rag doll, and I was like bashed around from from the, you know, the side of the wall to the train.
Oh,
and all
my God.
Yeah. And then I was conscious throughout the whole thing, so it was incredibly terrifying.
Could you see people looking down at you, David, from the train?
No. It was just what I'm saying is, as I got pulled down, I just remember seeing the side of the carriage doors seem to disappear up into the sky. But by then, I was in complete darkness. I was just, right underneath, and was just being, thrown all over the place. And I landed, literally, on the gravel of in between the tracks, and the train was still going on above my head at the high speed by then.
And you're bouncing, you're basically bouncing along. Your legs are being dragged around and everything.
Well, it was just like being thrown into a washing machine, on full speed.
Oh, my God.
It's just complete chaos. And, incredibly frightening. And then I just kind of lay with my face down into the gravel, and I just figured to myself, it's not over yet, I could get hit by part of the undercarriage of the train.
So. That's right. That's right. Yeah, there could be something hanging on the top there, where people stand to get on the train as it's going down the path. Are you still underground or are you above ground?
I was underneath the actual train at that point, so it was more of the like some of the undercarriage of the train.
God!
So I just kind of went, I was in survival mode, basically, and I just figured, right, at this stage, it's amazing how much I thought things through, and I thought, okay, think of the Indiana Jones movies and, 007 James Bond movies where, they're in this situation. Just put your head down and keep it right down, which is what I did. And the train eventually moved on.
Did you ever pass out?
No, I didn't do.
You stayed awake. And then how did you finally get out of this situation?
Well, basically, the train moved on, I was just left lying down there in between the rails, And
You basically disengaged from the train?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Disengaged from it.
The coat ripped away or something like that?
Yeah, it ripped as I fell down. As I said, when I first went down and was pulled right under, I think the sheer force then ripped the coat. I just remember hearing this tremendous rip, and down I went,
So the train finally passes you, right, I guess?
That's right, yeah.
And then there you are in the tracks, just laying there?
Yeah, I'm just lying there in the track, and then I just remember looking up and seeing, the sheer blue sky above me, and just the contrast of the hell and darkness I've just been through, and lying on the oily tracks and seeing this beautiful blue sky was just like, wow, hello.
Now, physically,
physically,
what had happened to you? I mean, did you still have your legs and stuff like that?
My left arm was actually severed from the elbow down, so that was like the first thing I noticed. So, I just noticed that this fine, thick coat that I'd got on was now shredded. And the whole arm was just completely ripped open. And also, then I realized at that point that my left arm had been completely, I was in a bad way. It was pretty messy.
I guess so.
It was incredible because I was in shock, and stuff. And the first thing I thought of, right, let me get my cell phone out and phone my sister to let her know what's happened. It's just
you were that cognizant of making a phone call.
Kind of not, because that's what I figured I should do. But obviously that was a crazy thing to be thinking of. I pulled the phone out and it was smashed anyhow. But by that time, help had arrived literally within seconds. Then the paramedics arrived, and these guys were incredible. They managed to get me off the track eventually, and then up onto the platform, which was about 6 or 7 foot up in height. And so that was a very painful process, just getting me off the track.
Did they ever find your arm? I mean, were they ever able to?
The arm was still there. Everything was with me still. In fact, the surgeons at the hospital, that's one of the things I had begged them to do when they pulled me in. I said, look, can you please save my left arm. and they did. I mean, it's they managed to sew it back on. And
so you've got your left arm. Is it functional?
It's fairly functional, not completely, but you know, it's pretty good. I mean, it's amazing what they can do. I mean, this is like three very long 8-hour operations to be able to save it and to.
Oh my God! Now, at what point, David, did you have the near death experience?
Okay, well, basically, they got me in an ambulance and they sped me down the highway and I went into a hospital. I went to Addenbrooke's Hospital, which is like a big university hospital in Cambridge. So I was lucky that we got this hospital there. So I arrived and I remember going into the emergency department and I remember seeing this big, huge semicircle of doctors and consultants and nurses waiting for me. So this whole team were like racing around trying to save me. I was losing copious amounts of blood at that point. And it was when I was actually in the emergency department that I was lying on the trolley with all this frantic noise going on around me that I suddenly left. Well, I was in agony as well. So I left that whole moment of being in pain and all the bright lights shining in my eyes to a completely dark and warm place. And all the pain had gone. And I was lying in what I thought was just like a really dark, beautiful, warm room. And I could see at first like these pulsating colors all around me. They were just kind of like they were like orbs of light, which were just slowly pulsating. And it was just calming me. And I just thought, wow, this is just like beautiful. What a contrast from the hell I'd just been through. And I lay there and then I suddenly felt a presence and I looked at my feet and just at my right-hand foot, I saw what was, I could only describe as this beautiful androgynous being, like a beautiful sort of person with, mm-hmm. with like blonde white hair and like glowing skin. And this person was just like stood there smiling at me with a knowing smile. And I thought, it's like I'd known this androgynous being the whole of my life and beyond. You know, it was like there was a strong connection there. And I just felt that this person was watching over me and guarding me. So I figured at this point that this is it, you know, that I'd died. And I'd gone on to the next stage. And
did you want to come back?
No, at that point, I thought, this is great. I had no sense of panic or fear that this is death. It was actually, I went with it completely and thought, well, this is great, because I felt so calm. And so the interesting thing as well, this being was wearing like a black T-shirt, like a sort of, you know, very contemporary sort of shirt and nothing sort of ethereal. So it felt like, you know, there was a sense of knowing between us, and like some, you know, when you meet somebody, say at a party that and you connect straight away, and you feel like you've known this person all your life. It was a bit like
right.
that, but by times by ten, you know, or more. So I laid my head back at that point, and I suddenly realized that I was lying on a huge kind of like slate rock, like a medieval altar, if you like. And it was just like, I thought, but it was very comfortable. And I laid back I looked down to check my injuries, to look at my body, to see how it was all looking. And everything was fixed. My whole body was completely intact. You know, my left arm, there was no scars or bruising. And I was covered in this like blue sheet, and the blue sheet was kind of like a satin sort of silky texture to it, and it was just keeping me very cool and calm and relaxed. Then I laid my head back onto the rock, and as I looked up, there were like three grids of white light that were like just slowly hovering above my head. And I couldn't take my gaze away from these grids of light, because the light that was coming from them was just like a pure white light, and it was just it was very bright light. But I wouldn't be able to look into something so bright like sunlight or electric light that bright. But this I could, and I just couldn't take my gaze away, because it was like a healing sort of light, the sensation was just so very comforting. So I just figured, well, what is going on here? You know, this is like I felt like I was being prepared for something.
And this is still when you're physically in the ambulance?
No, no, no. This is at this stage. I was actually in the hospital.
You're back in the hospital. Okay.
Yeah, I was in the hospital, and so I'm looking up at these bright white lights, these grids, and then I suddenly realized that there were two other beings with me, either side of me, a female form. One of them was sort of like an Asian or American sort of Indian appearance, and the other one was white Caucasian. And they both had their hands kind of hovering over my body, and they were like healing me, really, almost like a Reiki healing sort of form. But the energy that was coming from their hands was just like really powerful. It was like this sensation of almost like love. It was like a very intense form of love that was just coming from all three of these beings, basically. And it was like an energy that was just going right through my body, that every single molecule of me was kind of almost vibrating with this beautiful sensation. And
well, physically, how long were you out? Were you in a coma? Did it last?
I wasn't in, no.
Nothing like that.
I wasn't in a coma at all while this was happening. But you know, back on the Earth plane, if you like, I was still conscious. But this is the actual near death experience itself. You know, this is a different plane altogether from being in a state of coma. You know.
And this NDE that you had, David, was a one time NDE, or did you fall back into it and die again and come back, or was it just one time?
No, I stayed in the NDE, and that was it. It continued on, and I was still there at this stage, as it were. Yeah. So,
because your pictures, your artwork, they're remarkable, and it's gorgeous. The other side must look good, huh?
The what? Sorry.
The other side must look pretty good.
It's amazing. It's a beautiful sight to see. I mean, the next thing that I saw while I was there, which is in one of my paintings, is as I was lying on this huge rock, I figured that my family were still down in the hospital, because they'd all rushed in to see me, and I thought, well, they must be grieving over my dead body right now, because I figured that I was dead. And so I looked over the edge of this big huge rock, hoping to see them. And as I looked down, I didn't see them at all in the hospital. But what I did see was like this beautiful waterfall of stars. It was like a huge, huge arc of stars that was just kind of cascading down into galaxies and into the infinity, basically. And it was just like a beautiful sight. And there was lots of deep colors within in the base of this infinity. I thought, wow, this is amazing. And I knew by then that I wasn't in this small, darkened room that I figured, that I was actually in the universe itself. And so it was really quite tremendous.
when you came to in your physical body, were you in much pain, and was it bad for you?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I returned from the near-death experience itself and came back into the physical body, the pain came back immediately. It was just like literally like being thrown back to Earth, and
probably wished you could go back, huh?
Oh yeah. Well, I did and I didn't. You know, it's a lot of people say to me, oh, you know, you must have been really disappointed when you were thrown back into your body again. But I was just so charged with all the beautiful energy and love that I just received and seen on the other side that I didn't really feel that sensation. I was just so happy and charged with it.
Bliss. David, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back in a moment, and then we'll talk more about your NDE and how you then got to possess these amazing abilities that you came back with. We're back with David Ditchfield. His upcoming book is called Shine On. His website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's shineonthestory.com. And David, when you were in this near-death experience mode, And you mentioned that you saw some entities. Did you see anything that looked like God or Jesus, or it gave you any impression that it might have been them?
Well, yeah, I did actually. But it was not in the I saw what I figured was God, but it wasn't in the usual form that we all know from the Michelangelo paintings on the
right. He's not in. He's not in a
beard.
That's right.
It was So what it was that I saw was this tremendous sort of huge sort of tunnel of white light that was coming towards me, and this tunnel of white light was like surrounded by these swirling colors of yellows and oranges, and they were like flames, basically, very dramatic flames, but they weren't at all frightening to me, you know, they just looked really beautiful. And the energy that was coming from this huge tunnel was just so immense that I was just drawn to it, and I just felt this, again, this energy of love that was coming through to me was very, very powerful at that point, and I just figured, this is God. This is the source of all creation. This is where it all comes from. So yeah. So that's what I figured was God. And I'd never thought about God at all previous in my life. You know. So this was all like a new revelation to me.
When you came to in the hospital, and your arm was reattached, and you're in pain and everything, how long did it take you to physically recover?
Oh, well, I mean, I was in the hospital for weeks. I was in there for about a month, just under, but it took me, you know, a few years to fully get over it, basically. I was going in and out and stuff and getting myself back together. But I remember the consultant saying that that I was actually recovering at an incredible rate, and they couldn't believe it, you know. And I was saying to them, I said, I know why, because I'd just been to the other side, and I just tried to explain to them what had happened. And I know that experience had helped me with my recovery back in the physical realm, as it were, you know. And, of course, they smiled at me. They're scientists, so they didn't kind of argue with me. But, you know, they took it on board, I guess. But that's what I sensed, yeah, that I was getting help.
When did you realize you had these incredible abilities with art and music, for example?
Well, yeah, pretty much soon afterwards. I mean, how that came about was the very next night, because when I came through from the operation, they put me in my own room in the hospital. And I remember my sister coming in to visit me, and she came in and she was chatting very quietly to me. And just as she left, she said, "Is there anything I can get you?" And I said, "Yeah, can you get me a sketch pad? A small sketch pad and a pencil." And she said, "Okay," and didn't know why, but she brought it in anyhow. And I got the nurses to prop me up in the bed, and I did this very faint sketch of what I'd seen, because I was scared at that point that I was going to lose it and forget it all, which obviously I never did. I still haven't. But anyhow, I decided at that point that I wanted to do a huge painting of what I'd seen. I thought, I've got to do this. I wanted to do like a big Renaissance-style canvas, you know. And so that was my plan right from the off. And so I did. My aunt had come over from Canada, and she was visiting, and she'd come to visit me. And she said, "I'll buy you a canvas." And so she did. So she bought this big canvas. And I was putting it off and off, you know. When I kept looking at this thing, I thought, "Oh, can I do this?" But once I started painting, I suddenly realized that it was coming together like really, really beautifully. And I realized at that point that I was actually channeling ideas through from somewhere else. And it wasn't just me that was putting paint onto that canvas, you know. It was, I was getting help. And these new ideas and these new gifts were very exciting to me. And I was just very charged by it. What happened was some friends of my sister's ran like a gym and a sort of yoga health center. And they said, "Look, we've got a spare studio up in the attic that you can use this week to start your paintings on. And you can use it for a week." I said, "That'd be brilliant." So I went up there and started painting. And they were loving having me there. And they said, "Look, you can stay. You can stay." And I stayed there for 2 years.
Jeez.
So I carried on painting prolifically. And
were you in shock that you were able to paint that well?
I kind of was, but there was a big part of me that was still felt like I was connected to the other side that I'd been to, and
yeah.
I felt like I got this kind of cord connection with them. So, in effect, all these different things that were happening didn't come as a surprise to me. They were beautiful surprises, obviously, to me, but I just felt this connection, and I knew that there was something more to what had just happened, and I felt that. Why did they send me back? You know, why did I come back? And what was my purpose? And so I was constantly trying to find out what that was. But now I realize that my life's purpose was to actually to create, you know, what I'd seen on the other side through my art and through my music, and to be able to convey it to other people so that people could basically look into that window, as it were.
That's amazing. Now, what about the symphony writing and thing? How did that happen?
Yeah, well, basically what happened there was while I was up in this studio space in the attic of this gym, people used to come up who were coming in for yoga sessions and to see my artwork. And a lot of people were fascinated by the story behind them all because they were all about the NDE. And one of them was a cello player from the local orchestra. And she said, look, we've got a concert coming up. Can we use one of your paintings for the poster? I said, yeah, sure. So that happened. So we became friends. And at that point, I was going for spiritual healing. I'd come across this spiritualist church, and I started going there because I wanted to try and find people that I could talk to about my experience with, and I knew they'd get it, and they did. And when I was in there, they said, look, you look like you're in a pretty bad way, you could do some spiritual healing. And I said, that sounds great. I'll have some. So they do spiritual healing there every Thursday. So I started doing that. And in these healing sessions, some of the healers would give me clairvoyant messages. And they kept coming through, these messages saying, we're getting through from the other side that you're going to start writing a piece of music about your experience. And I figured, okay, well, I figured it was just going to be like a 3-minute song, you know.
Right.
So I pulled out this old cheap synthesizer that I'd got thrown in the bottom of the cupboard, pulled it out, stuck it on my kitchen table, and started playing around on that. And these chords came through, and I thought, wow, that sounds really beautiful. And I started developing it from there, and I thought, this is not going to be a 3-minute song at all. This is actually something that could be played by an orchestra. So I was having coffee with this friend who from the orchestra, and I was telling her all about it. And I said, look, this sounds like it could be played by an orchestra. And she said, well, maybe we could do it, you know. So I thought, I'm going to hold you to that. So I went away and just worked very hard at developing it to a stage that I'd actually thought, well, I was hearing other instruments. I was hearing like a horn sound, and then I realized that was a French horn, and I'd hear like harps, and I started throwing them all into the pot, as it were. Then my brother turned around and said, look, I've got this app that you can use, and you can plug it into your computer. And when you play the notes on your, you know, your keyboard, it will transpose them into musical notation. So I had this app from my brother and then got it all into musical notation and printed off. Then I met up with my friend from the orchestra and in the cafe and said, look, here's some score. What do you think? And she said, this looks great. So she got together with the conductor and a few other people from the orchestra. And they said, we'll do it. We'll give it a go. And to my amazement, they said, look, are you okay to talk to the local press just a bit about your piece? I said, yeah, sure. So I did. And from there onwards, that the press started coming in, and then the BBC approached me and said, we want to come and film you and film the rehearsal.
Jesus, so it just exploded for you, didn't it?
It did. It just did. It was amazing, George, because I just thought, wow, this is like, yeah, okay, I'll talk to the local press. And all of a sudden, people were very fascinated by the whole story behind it, you know, and because the piece was actually about my near-death experience. And so the concert sold out like 2 weeks in advance, which was like unheard of by the orchestra. So we were all very excited by it. And so the buzz that night was just tremendous. You know, the atmosphere, it was like a beautiful summer's night. And it was, I just sat there And the first chords came in, and obviously I was like, part of me was nervous, but part of me was feeling very sort of like charged and confident about it all. And it was really quite lovely just sitting there. I was sat there with my family on the front row. You know, we'd been given front row seats, and they played it all the way through. And then it finished, and my mother just turned around with tears in her eyes and said, "That was just so beautiful, David, you know." And I said, "Oh, thanks." And then my sister said, "David, look, behind you." So I looked round, and the whole audience was like a standing ovation. And it was just, so I'd recommend it very highly. It's a beautiful experience to be in that situation.
David, what would you say at this point, knowing what you know, what the other side is? Is it something very spiritual? Is it part of our living environment? Is it tied to the universe? Is it something else? What do you think it is?
It's a bit of both, yeah, because it's very much a part of us. I mean, this is something that I try and talk to with my friends and people around me that, you know, we've all got our spirit guides and we've all got our angels, and they're there for us. And we can call upon them, you know, and we can communicate with them. And I do on a day-to-day basis. You know, I feel a sensation that they're around me and they're supporting me, because they just want to help. You know, there's unconditional love they want to give us, and we just don't allow them in. I firmly believe that what I saw is the afterlife, is the next stage. You know, that when we die, that's the next stage that we go on to.
You seem to have found, though, something that was almost heavenly, especially with the gifts you got when you came back, the ability to paint and the composing. But what about hell? I mean, you didn't see that, but what do you think of it?
I didn't see. Well, it's hard for me to actually comment and judge that, because I didn't actually see it myself. I do know that, because obviously I've done more research into NDE since my own, and I know that some people have given accounts that they haven't actually seen hell, but they have to go through a period of kind of almost like judgment. These are things that I've read, where people who haven't been too good in their lives, they haven't, you know, that, you know, people who've been unkind to others. So they face what is called a recall, and they have to be shown where they've messed up and where they've attacked or been unfair to other people, and it's like a judgment, not if you like, and they have to go through that process.
Are you glad you had the NDE? Did it change your life?
Yeah, totally. I'm you know, people say to me, if you could change what happened to you that day going under a train, would you? And I say emphatically no, because my life needed to change. You know, my life before was spiraling out of control, basically, and it was me that I was the person that I was attacking. You know, I was beating myself up, if you like, and I needed that wake up call to sort of turn me around and make my life. It's more three dimensional now, is the way I describe it. You know, I'm in a much better place than what I was.
You've got over 40 paintings. You've got the ability to compose symphonies, and you still don't know how to read music, do you?
That's right. I don't. I mean, it's incredible. I remember going to the very first rehearsal with the orchestra, and I was really nervous. I walked in there, you know, I come from a working class blue collar background, you know, and I'd left school without any qualifications, so most of the work I was picking up was manual work, labouring work, you know. So there I was in this very sort of middle-class, educated, highly educated sort of arena, you know. And I walked in, and the conductor said, "Oh, the composer's here." And I was thinking, the composer, you know. And he said, "David, would you like to say a few words about your piece to the orchestra?" And I said, no, that's fine. I bottled it, you know. And he said, "No, please do." So I started speaking, and you know what? It was amazing. I know that my guides that I talked about earlier were with me, because they were giving me this confidence and strength to be able to talk about what had happened. And the whole orchestra were really fascinated, and they were asking me questions all about it. And I was worried that one of them was going to turn around. In fact, one of them turned around and said, "David, in bar 54, we've got a C major seventh here, whereas you've got it written as a C flat." And I was going, So I managed to sort of, what I did was I said, can you just play it for me? And so they played it. I said, no, it needs to go. And then I sang the melody back. So, you know, it's interesting. But, yeah, I can't read a single note of music, but I can still compose. And, yeah.
It is, were you a believer before you had this NDE? A believer
no,
in, you know, life after death, the other side, God?
Do you know what? I didn't really think about it at all. I didn't really think about death. I didn't fear it, but I didn't think about it, and I didn't really think about God or you know, or have any faith, as it were. You know, I was just living my life, you know, day to day, and just trying to hustle my way through it. And anything that went wrong in my life, I was just looking for the quick fix, you know. Like most people do, just say, oh, you know, I'll get over this. Let's go down to the bar and have a beer and chat with friends. That'll get me through it. And that's the way I saw myself through life. But no, I had no faith at that point. I wish I did, you know. I think it would have helped me a lot. But, yeah, I do now. Yeah, I've complete faith.
Our friend Dr. Raymond Moody wrote the foreword, I understand, to Shine On.
That's right, yeah.
And that book will come out in June.
Yeah, June the 26th it comes out, yeah. So
we're way ahead of the curve with you right now then, aren't we?
Well, it's fine because, I mean, the momentum and the energy is building up for it. And,
oh, sure, absolutely.
It is on pre-order, you know, through Amazon. So people are starting to, you know, lay down their pre-orders, which is great. So, you know, it's for me, the energy feels right to be talking about it now. And because, well, just more than anything, you know, I really would love people just to be able to listen to what I have to say more than anything.
Absolutely. Well, it's a great to read. David, we're going to come back. Final hour to go. We're going to take phone calls. Folks, share with us your questions for David or your own near-death experience.